I am like the roaring lion in the dream. My roaring will wake you up from this dream unto reality.
This is The Lion's Roar, the Dear Sai podcast all about understanding the teachings of Satya Sai Baba in their truest form.
Sai Ram, I'm Sanjeevan, and today we expand our vision and shift our attention to the culmination of devotion, the final destination.
Episode 9, The Consequence of Attention and the Paradigm of Devotion.
So here we are, 2.5 discourses in. We have followed Swami from the beginning, exploring the body, its many names, its purpose, and how to maintain it. This whole time, Swami has been taking us down a river, urging us to ask ourselves, who am I? Then, all of a sudden, we reach a sentence in this third discourse that brings us to a standstill. Before I tell you which sentence it is, why don't I throw you in the deep end? Let's have a listen and see if the same thought strikes you.
ఇది కొన్ని విధములైన విచారణ సలిపినప్పుడే దీని నిజ స్వరూపం మనకు గోచరమవుతుంది.
Only when we apply certain methods of inquiry, the true nature of the self is realized.
స్వస్వరూప సంధానమే దీని యొక్క నిష్ట.
The union that happens when the power of attention of the self turns towards itself is a way to remain as our true self. Remaining in this self is the right or appropriate path to attaining the true vision of the self. Knowing the self directly is the culmination of bhakti. From the standpoint of a witness, we must develop an expansive vision. We should then experience creation with this expansive vision. Knowing the self directly is the culmination of bhakti? Did this statement get you too? Also, what does turning the attention of the self towards itself mean? And how does this process lead to the goal? Where does devotion fit into all of this? Does this redefine the word bhakti? I'll stop there before I scramble my brains further. It's time to dial 911, I mean plus 91, to Prashanthi Nilayam. Brother Sai Giridhar joins us today to navigate this section of the discourse with us.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering our most humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. It's interesting to note that these five sentences that we are going to ponder upon today are possibly the simplest essence of the entire Adhyatma Vidya or spiritual knowledge. Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam, that is, amongst all forms of knowledge, spiritual knowledge is foremost. In this section of the discourse, Swami actually talks about five very distinct things. One, certain methods of inquiry that are essential for self-realization. Two, spiritual discipline, a very unique definition of the same. Three, attainment of jnana or knowledge of the self, where the self is revealed to the seeker. Four, the goal finally attained to be the witness self, which Bhagavan says is the culmination of bhakti. Now, interestingly, this is where he brings in the correlation between the paths of devotion and wisdom, bhakti and jnana. And finally, five, how life is experienced with self-realization, which is the most interesting part. Describing the path of self-inquiry and the result of such inquiry, Bhagavan goes on to say, Svasvarupa sandhaname dhiniki okanishtha. The union that happens when the power of attention of the self turns towards itself is a way to remain in our true self. Now, this may seem really confusing. What is this union that results out of the power of attention of the self that turns towards itself? Let us endeavor to understand this through our own life experience of waking up every morning. If we are alert enough at the point of waking, we know that the first experience that we have is we become aware that we exist. After that, there could be some thought that may arise in our mind, or our eyes might open and we may see a visual, and then our attention goes towards that thought or that visual, right? So the fundamental thing that is closest to our reality is our presence, our existence, which is our reality and which is perceived by us every time we wake up from the point of deep sleep. When we say deep sleep, it is sleep without any dreams. And when we wake up and we perceive our presence to begin with, after that, from our presence, our attention moves towards a thought, and that thought is perceived by us, or the visual is perceived by us. Then we, by the sheer force of habit, get into the regular identification with our thoughts, what we are seeing, what we are experiencing, what not. In this manner, we go on to lead what is called as our life. So fundamentally, we have our presence, and there is attention emanating from our presence that goes towards the thought. Now consider this. What would happen if this attention does not go towards the thought but remains in ourself, or it is turned towards ourself? Because when the attention goes towards the thought or the visual that we see, we gain the knowledge of the thought or the knowledge of what we see, hear, or experience. When knowledge is a consequence of attention, if we want to have the knowledge of the self, then the power of attention must be diverted towards the self, isn't it? So this is the unique meaning of self-inquiry that Bhagavan is presenting here when he says the union happens when the power of attention of the self turns towards itself, and it is the way to remain as our true self.
This really is quite unique and definitely something that requires a lot of individual contemplation. So why is this the way to remain as our true self?
Because the true self, contrary to popular belief, cannot be attained. Self-realization cannot be attained. Why it cannot be attained? Because the self is ever present. It never diminishes. The presence is eternal in nature. As a result of that, it is not something that can be attained. When our attention that moves towards the mind and the body regularly is turned towards the self is known in its true nature. And the knowledge of the self, as it is said, or jnana, is revealed naturally. The self is ever present. The knowledge of the self can only happen when the attention is on the self. But by habit, what we do is our attention always goes towards the thought or towards what we are experiencing through the five senses. And that results in we gaining tremendous knowledge of the various things in the world, but we are bereft of the self-knowledge. This is possibly one way to elucidate what Bhagavan has given us in these beautiful words. Going ahead in his second sentence, in this section of the discourse, Bhagavan says, Nishtane jnanamulaku sariyainattuvanti drashta, means once we turn the attention on the self, Remaining in the self is the right or appropriate path to attaining the true vision of the self. According to the scriptures, knowing the Atman is becoming the Atman. So, to attain union with our true self, we first need to recognize what the self is by turning our attention back to the self. This is self-inquiry. Another way to understand self-inquiry is to negate all that we are not so that we are left with what we really are. What we really are is unchanging in its nature. What we are not changes all the time. So the path of inquiry as suggested by Bhagavan is to negate all that we are not so that we are left with what we really are. This nishtha or spiritual discipline of perceiving and remaining as our true self is the knowledge of the self. Now, the knowledge of the self and the self itself are not two different things. Yes, you heard that right. Like in the world, we have objects and subjects, and we have the knowledge of an object or the knowledge of a subject. But in spiritual wisdom, the knowledge of the self and the self are one and the same, because the very faculty of knowing is not derived from an external agency, but it is from the power of the self itself. The self knows itself by its own self. In the third verse of this paragraph that we are studying, Bhagavan goes on to say, Drashta yokka sandarshaname bhakti yokka prabhavamu. This is very, very interesting for all of us. Knowing the self directly is the culmination of bhakti or devotion. Swami then goes on to describe the very nature of the self, which is to be a drashta or the witness. Once we are established in our true nature, we know ourselves to be the witness to everything that is experienced in life through the body and the mind. Bhagavan here says that this state of witness is the culmination of bhakti.
Ah, this is the statement that brought me to a standstill. So, what is this bhakti?
Swami defines it in Discourse 12 of this 1990 Samashava series itself. I quote, Bhakti, devotion, is the best means to experience this Atmajnana and enjoy Atmananda, the bliss of the self. What is bhakti? It is constant contemplation on the self. Bhakti and jnana are not two different things. Bhakti itself is jnana, and jnana itself is bhakti, and jnana is prema, divine love. With this sacred cord of love, you can bind the Lord Himself. Unquote. Swami has clarified here that Atma, Atmajnana, Bhakti, that is devotion, and Prema, divine love, all of these mean the same.
If Bhakti is constant contemplation on the self, does this mean singing bhajans, acts of worship? Basically, everything I do in my prayer room is not really bhakti?
Well, aspiration of the devotee is to have an indelible connect with God, isn't it? That is why we do these activities in the first place, be it bhajans or prayers. But our experience is that the connection we develop through these activities lasts only for a stipulated period, isn't it? It doesn't stay forever. While these activities are essential as stepping stones, the culmination of this aspiration is achieved only in union with God, where God and us are inseparable.
So, we initially start with loving God as a separate form, but we have to move towards knowing that He is our true self. Is that what we are driving towards?
Devotion starts with a form of God, but eventually moves to the formless. Just as how Swami attracted us to Him with His beautiful enchanting form and kept telling us after we came to Him that He is not the body but that which expresses itself through that beautiful divine avataric form. In Prema Vahini, Bhagwan further clarifies and defines the real meaning of bhakti. But before going into that, I would like to share a story that happened in the year 2001. One of the professors in Swami's university would get family interviews very often. On one such occasion, this in fact happened to be the final interview that Swami gave the entire family together. The usual scene in these interviews would be that Swami would, you know, call all of them in, and as he always would do, the perfect host, he would usher in everybody, and after everyone has taken their seat, he himself would turn on the fan, the light, and he would close and bolt the door of the interview room, go and take the seat, and Swami would very lovingly spend a few minutes with the entire family. But on this particular occasion, it was slightly different. Swami ushered them in, they all sat down, Swami turned on the light and fan, and he bolted the door of the interview room. He turned around and thundered at them like never before. Swami said, "How long will you run behind this body?" Listening to these words, the devotees in the interview room were shocked and they were wondering what is really happening. So Swami walked a few paces, took his seat and again repeated this sentence. He said, "How long will you run behind this body?" So the devotees replied, "Swami, we don't know anything other than this beautiful form of yours. All our life we have loved you this way and we continue to love you. What is happening, Swami? Why are you saying this?" Swami said, "I am not this body. How long will you run behind this body? How many times do I have to tell you that I am the force that operates through this body, and it is the same force that operates through your body as well? Know that to be your real self, and that is really me." And listening to these words of Swami, the devotees who were already stunned at that point of time, they prayed to Swami and said, "Swami, we don't know how to know ourselves or the power, the force that is behind us, which you're saying is you. How do we know that, Swami?" And Swami, you know, replied so beautifully. He said, "I have been telling you this, teaching you this for decades together now, and yet you ask this question. The only way by which you can know this true self, my presence, which is your reality, is through prema or love." These were the words of Bhagwan. In Prema Vahini, Bhagwan further clarifies and defines the real meaning of bhakti. It means where there is no vibhakti. Vibhakti in Sanskrit means where there is separation. Where there is no separation between the Lord and the devotee, that is true bhakti.
So, the meaning of true bhakti is oneness. Brother, what does this state of true bhakti or oneness look like?
The best possible example to illustrate this is the relationship between the Gopikas and Krishna. The profound life stories of the Gopikas narrated by Bhagwan Baba during the 1995 summer course provide us with deep insights on their state of being. The Gopikas were deeply and madly in love with Krishna. They were bereft of any worldly desires. They were in fact seers who had pure minds and complete control over their senses. Swami further illustrated this through an incident when Uddhava, a cousin, close friend and disciple of Krishna, carried a letter to the Gopikas from Krishna. Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan, the place where Krishna lived during his childhood, and also the place where the Gopalas and the Gopikas stayed. Krishna had himself not visited Vrindavan after he left for the nearby town Mathura at the young age of 11 years. Many years had passed thus, and the Gopikas and the Gopalas of Vrindavan were deeply agonized by the separation from Krishna. Many of them waited all their life with the hope that Krishna would return to Vrindavan. It was this intense pining and yearning that Krishna perceived that inspired him to send this message to the Gopikas in the first place, to assuage their pain and bring some solace and succor to their agonizing heart. On hearing that Uddhava, the close associate of Krishna, had arrived, all the Gopikas ran in eager anticipation with palpitations in their heart. Is Krishna going to visit them finally? This was a question that was profound in their minds and hearts. Uddhava told them that there is a letter from Krishna that has come for them. He inquired if any of them would read the letter out for the rest. The Gopikas replied that they were illiterate and hence were not in a position to read. There were a few Gopikas, however, who were minimally literate. One among them came forward and told Uddhava that she will not be able to read the letter since the fire of separation from Krishna that burns in her heart and her whole body might transform the magnetic energy in the body into electrical energy, and that would destroy the letter. Another Gopika said even she could not read the letter, for the words of Krishna should not be destroyed, and her suppressed torrential tears of deep agony would be triggered if she as much as saw the letters scripted by Krishna, and that would drench and smear the words that Krishna himself had written. Such was their love and devotion to Krishna. All the Gopikas in unison requested Uddhava to read the letter out loud for them. Swami, in his narration of the story, describes the content of the letter as follows. I quote, "O Gopikas, don't feel sad. I am in you, with you, around you, all the time. I am not separate from you. I am not an outsider. I am your Hridayavasi, resident of your heart. I am your very own. My messenger Uddhava will impart some teachings to you. Listen to Uddhava and practice his teachings." Unquote. Uddhava's own intention was to teach these simpletons yoga sadhana to attain union with the source. Swami beautifully plays around with these words, Viyoga, Yoga and Samyoga. The Gopikas were suffering from Viyoga separation and Uddhava had come to teach them yoga, the science of union, but what they actually sought was Samyoga, equal state of existence with Krishna. That was the innermost quest of the Gopikas. The Gopikas further told Uddhava that in order to grasp his teachings, they did not have 10 minds like him. They were only endowed with one mind, and even that one mind had gone away with Krishna. Or rather, Krishna had stolen away that mind. Swami highlights that this one mind that the Gopikas were referring to is one-pointedness and contemplation. Many minds, or 10 minds as the Gopikas referred, signifies a mind that is running behind many, many thoughts that are scattered, right? But here, one mind that the Gopikas were referring to is a one-pointed mind that was constantly contemplating on their own true self, which was Krishna. They further iterated that even that one mind departed permanently with Krishna, symbolizing that their one-pointed attention or dhyana was on Krishna consciousness and had irrevocably turned towards it. The great poet saint Surdas further describes this state thus in his beautiful couplets. He says, and I quote, "The sense had gone cold and the body was as if headless," unquote, implying that the Gopikas were beyond the pull of the sensory pleasures of the world and were living without any sense of body identification or ego. Uddhava was deeply impacted by his experience with the Gopikas. He understood a different dimension of what prema is. A dimension where prema and jnana were not only synonymous and sublime, but was bursting forth spontaneously in daily life, bereft of any scholarship or punditry in the prevailing books of knowledge. He returned to Krishna and reported his experience. In spite of going through all the difficulties of life, the Gopikas were equal-minded through every experience in life. They even told Uddhava that they did not have a mind to pay attention to the difficulties that life presented to them. Swami describes the conversation between Uddhava and Krishna as follows, and I quote, Uddhava said, Krishna, you are imprinted in the consciousness of the Gopikas. It is not possible for anyone to separate you from their hearts. It is not possible to see devotees like them anywhere in the world. I went to teach them wisdom, but instead they taught me devotion. Krishna, all of us are deluded by your physical form, but it is the Gopikas alone who have realized your divinity. Unquote. So in the final point of this section of the discourse, Swami says that by being the witness that we really are, this must expand our vision naturally, spontaneously. And this expansive vision that we gain must translate itself into our day-to-day life, just like how the Gopikas did. Jai Sai Ram.
We can finally see what bhakti is. It's not an act or an adverb describing actions as performed with devotion. Bhakti is a state of being, as we see exemplified in the lives of the Gopikas. It is the culmination of all our spiritual endeavors, isn't it? Moving from an apparent state of separation to one of no separation or oneness. Interestingly, the state of the Gopikas not only redefines bhakti, it also redefines self-realization. Becoming a drashta or a seer doesn't necessarily mean sitting in meditation posture in a cave. A seer simply experiences creation with the knowledge of the self in the background, just as the Gopikas experienced everything merely as a witness. I feel like Swami's words have got us floating now. Thank you, brother, for bringing our attention to the meaning behind these five powerful lines. Ah, Swami, you have taken us merrily down this stream, but now more than ever, we need your help to come out of this dream. I think this time, brothers and sisters, we should say, stay rosome.